If an atomic bomb attack sets fire to your home, will you know what to do? Will you know how to save not only your property, but your life itself and the lives of others? Here is your plan for survival if disaster should strike.
This is the 14th in a weekly series of transcribed programs called Plan for Survival, broadcast over the Civil Defense Radio Network. This network links virtually every radio station in New York State and operates entirely by air. It can function even if regular communication lines are destroyed. Now here's Bill Leonard.
This week, we're going to answer some questions about firefighting in the event of an emergency. Most of them questions that you've sent in. Again, this week, our program's in two parts. First, our guest will be Chief B.R. Townsend of the Division of Safety of the State of New York. Following this, local stations will have the opportunity to discuss firefighting problems as they affect their individual communities. Chief Townsend, let me ask you this one question before getting into our mail. Why is there so much emphasis placed on firefighting?
Mr. Leonard, when an atomic bomb explodes, it sends out a tremendous heat flash which starts many fires simultaneously. It is this fire that turned into a widespread firestorm and conflagration that most of the damage and the casualties. But remember one thing. Fire service is not only physical action against big blazes. Its foundation lies in stopping small fires when and where they start. A great deal can be done with the individual firefighting appliances if they are used properly and promptly. If you act fast, you can help reduce losses from small fires, which converge into really destructive big blazes, and leave the regular firefighting forces free to go to work on major conflagrations.
Our first question from a listener comes from a man who lives on the north shore of Long Island, and he writes, "We have a volunteer fire department in our town. Will there also be an auxiliary firefighting organization besides this, or are the volunteers considered the auxiliary?"
That question can only be answered by your local director of civil defense. Only he or your fire chief best knows the means, the capabilities, and the needs of your fire department. I suggest you contact your local civil defense director for the answer.
Here's one from a homeowner in Utica. He writes, "Why is it necessary to turn off your oil burner when the red alert, the warning signal, is sounded?"
Because you have a dangerous hazard there. An open or burning flame can be scattered if your home is heavily hit by the force of the explosion. Burning oil spreads through your basement, means your home will be almost certainly lost if the oil should be ignited.
And the same man then asks, Chief Townsend, "Is there any danger of fire if the pilot light in the gas stove is left on, or should this be extinguished during an attack?"
The pilot light of a gas stove does constitute a fire danger, but you undergo a much greater danger by turning it off. Our instructions to the public concerning pilot lights are to leave them alone. Turning off the pilot light does not get rid of the gas already in the pipes, and much of this will flow into your home. Any flash flame can then start a fire. If the area in which you live has been heavily hit in an atomic attack, the flow of gas into all buildings in the affected area will be stopped by your utility company.
Well, this writer lives in a suburb of Rochester and drives into work every day. He says, "If I'm in my car when an attack comes, is there any special fire hazard from my ignition or gas tank?"
I would say that no special hazard or danger existed, unless the vehicle were directly in the path of the flash heat or fairly close to the ground zero.
This question comes from a dairy farmer near Kingston, and he writes, "We're on the outskirts of a medium-sized city. Is there any publication available on firefighting precautions to protect livestock?"
I know of no special publication on this particular subject. Should fire occur, however, the same basic rules that apply in your everyday life would not be changed at all. Your first consideration as a farmer naturally would be for the protection and survival of your livestock before your barns. The latter can be replaced more readily. I suggest you contact your local civil defense director and farm cooperative for more specific information relating directly to your area.
A lady in Albany writes, "Does the civil defense plan call for extra firefighting volunteer help to go to hospitals, homes for the aged, and the like, in case of attack?"
No, it would be rather useless and futile on a red alert suddenly to attempt distribution of firefighting forces throughout a city without knowing where the danger source was to be after the attack. Equipment and personnel in one part of a city might then be blocked by rubble from entering the part of the city where the fire was the most dangerous. The most important single factor, however, is that the red alert, or first public warning, means get to cover, and that goes for firefighting forces also. We do not know how much time there will be available to seek shelter after the red alert, and instructions to everyone, excepting a few civil defense key personnel, are to seek shelter immediately.
Chief Townsend, here's another question. What steps should be taken to prepare a house or apartment to resist destruction by fire that might result from an atomic attack?
There are two basic steps. One, reducing existing fire hazards as much as possible. And secondly, provide yourself with the necessary firefighting apparatus, learn how to use it, and teach your family how to use it. In the home, the first step is to get rid of waste and unnecessary materials lying around the house that will easily and quickly burn. This means paper, wood, rags, flammable liquids, and so forth. Attics and closets jammed with paper, rags, and a lot of junk are a dangerous fire hazard. Store your flammable materials in metal cans. For the apartment dweller, the procedure is essentially the same, but it must be done on a group basis. Get home firefighting apparatus. That means water and sand pails, stirrup pumps, and fire extinguishers. The apartment dweller should see to it that his apartment house is prepared. If not, he will have no one but himself to blame. One last suggestion. With your immediate neighbors, organize a sort of fire and rescue service for your own street or block or apartment house. If several homes on a street are burning, your immediate neighbors pitching in to help with a concerted effort means that they can probably extinguish or limit the spread of flame, and at the same time be able to effect immediate rescue. It means getting to know your neighbors well. It means mutual protection and self-help, which is simply another way of saying civil defense.
Thank you, Chief B.R. Townsend of the Division of Safety of the State of New York. We'll have more information about civil defense in just a moment. This concludes the New York State portion of this civil defense program. This is Bill Leonard again. Now let's turn to firefighting in case of atomic attack, as we must face the problem in our own backyard in the city of New York. And here to answer our questions is the Fire Commissioner of New York City, the Honorable George P. Monahan. Commissioner Monahan, let's get a general perspective on this business first of all. In the event of air atomic bombing, what is the relative danger to life as among concussion, radiation, and fire?
In Hiroshima and Nagasaki, 50 to 60% of the deaths resulted from concussion, 20 to 30% from fire, and 10 to 15% from atomic radiation. The relative danger to life, therefore, would be 5 deaths from concussion to each 3 by fire and 1 by radiation.
Well, sir, is the same true in the case of bombing by conventional explosives?
No. Statistics from English, German, and Japanese cities show that in conventional high explosive air raids, followed by incendiaries, 80% of deaths resulted from concussion and 20% by fire, or a ratio of 4 to 1.
Well, a listener, E.M. of Brooklyn, wants to know, will it be necessary to put in an alarm, either by phone or by nearby alarm box, should a fire result from bombing?
The answer is yes, with reservations. In sections remote from the target center, it may be found necessary to send in alarms, but we expect every citizen, whether a civil defense volunteer or not, to make a determined effort to extinguish these small fires and withhold the transmission of fire alarms by any method whatsoever until they are certain that they cannot cope with the situation at hand.
Another Brooklyn listener, Mr. J.L.L., writes as follows. We prepared a shelter in our basement. As we understand it, we're not to leave the shelter until the all clear. But if the upper part of the house takes fire during a raid, should we leave it? Should we extinguish the fire?
Bill, we must remember that following an aerial atomic burst, the blast force is completely spent in 1 or 2 seconds, and all radiological hazards will be dissipated 30 to 90 seconds later. But the fire damage is just beginning. Immediate action by all citizens, as well as the firefighting forces, is imperative if the fire is to be controlled. The answer is, fight the fire. For barring additional bombs, fire is the only remaining danger.
Mr. R.E.O. of Manhattan writes, I was told there'd soon be some volunteer civil defense firefighting groups organized. Where would I sign up for this kind of work?
Enroll at your nearest firehouse or at any branch of the Office of Civil Defense, Information, and Recruitment. We are appealing to men between the ages of 25 and 50 years to volunteer for our auxiliary fire corps. All enrolled members will be trained in American Red Cross first aid, radiological self-help, and other related subjects, as well as in firefighting. Remember that civil defense is basically fire defense, so please enroll now.
Commissioner Monahan, Mr. M.M. of the University Heights section writes this. Some neighbors and myself were discussing civil defense fire auxiliaries, and one man said that the auxiliary would also serve in New York City as a volunteer fire brigade during peacetime. Is this true? What about that, Commissioner?
Volunteers have completed the prescribed training course, are now permitted to respond to fire alarms, and perform all the duties of regular firemen, except to enter burning buildings. They and all newly enrolled volunteers, as their training is completed, will continue to enjoy this privilege until the federal government decides that the danger of foreign attack no longer exists.
Mr. W.W.R. of Manhattan writes us, I'm in charge of the standpipe sprinkler system of a theater on Broadway. Are we going to receive any special instructions on what to do during a bombing emergency?
The answer to that is you should become a member of the building technicians unit of our auxiliary corps. They receive instructions at four sessions, each of 2 hours duration.
And here's Mrs. F.M. of the Bronx with a good one, Commissioner. She writes, in case the water mains are shattered by a bomb, how will the fire department get water for firefighting?
We expect that following an atomic attack, our water supplies will be severely curtailed. So we have incorporated every possible source in our emergency plan. The entire waterfront has been surveyed, and all locations where the taking of river water is possible has been listed, including inland lakes and ponds, indoor and outdoor swimming pools, and private wells.
And Miss A.C.B. of Manhattan wants to know, will there be work for women in the firefighting auxiliaries?
Definitely yes. 2,500 telephone operators, clerks, and stenographers are required to receive alarms, dispatch companies, and record developments. This is the least publicized face of the fire organization, but a most important one. However, whether you're a man or a woman, the first thing to do is make up your mind that you want to train for duty in this vital Department of Civil Defense. Then go to your local firehouse. They'll give you all the help and all the information you need.
Thank you, Fire Commissioner George P. Monahan of New York City. Next week, our topic will be police protection. Our guests, Lieutenant John F. Manapoli of the New York State Police and Police Commissioner Thomas F. Murphy of New York City. Try to be with us, won't you? This is Bill Leonard reminding you that civil defense is common sense.
You've been listening to the 14th in a series of transcribed programs called Plan for Survival, brought to you over a special statewide emergency broadcasting network. Send us your questions, and we'll answer as many as we can on future programs. Remember, the only address you need is Plan for Survival, Box 22, Murray Hill Station, New York 16. Be sure to listen at this same time next week when we'll talk about police protection. This is the Civil Defense Radio Network.